This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. The Bernstein and Rahimi Show. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score. Reasonable, level-headed, informed sports talk for your workday. Dan Bernstein, Layla Rahimi.
Just don't see a trade happening from Chicago to Chicago this year. However, the thing they really need, they could use another infielder. Obviously, Bob Nightingale linked Escobar to this team a month ago. Nothing has happened from that. Other names that have been mentioned, you know, there's Story, there's Frazier. I know a lot of White Sox fans have been asking for Bryant. There's no way it's happening. But I think they could use another bat.
Smith delivers the 0-1. Bryant swings and hits one in the air to deep left center field. Going back is the center fielder, Marshall. Look up. This is gone. A two-run home run by Chris Bryant.
The Sox have expressed the desire to make a trade for a guy that goes beyond just these 2 months. They don't want to empty out the farm system or give away really good assets for a two-month rental at this point.
The Bernstein and Rahimi Show.
Hamilton's got it, and the White Sox are able to stay sweep this weekend by taking the finale of the series, a pitching and defense game, 3-1 Vail Hosts.
Middays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And we are busy, busy today on this Monday as we digest a weekend's worth of baseball and Olympics and football news. We've got all of it for you. We've got White Sox talk. That's going to be with Steve Stone at 10 o'clock. There's some Cubs discussion to be had as well today, midday midway at 10:40. Carlos Pena of MLB Network and Marquee Sports Network will join us at 11. And we'll close out the show with 71 seconds of hockey, as is our want. 312-644-6767 is our number at WSCR The Score. We've just added Hub Arkish to talk Bears with us at 11:20 as well. I should mention that. You call us on the Score listener line that's powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today, or visit BetQL.com. If you want to email us, that's BernsteinRahimi at 670thescore.com. You go there to listen to us live. We stream at 670thescore.com. We have texting. That's through the text zone, brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at RosenHyundai.com. When you text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter's at BernsteinRahimi. She's at Layla Rahimi. I got the black t-shirt memo today, apparently.
Yeah, that's what happens, right? When you work with somebody enough, you start dressing alike.
I'm at Dan_Bernstein. Make sure you download the Odyssey app. That way you can stream The Score on your mobile devices, interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. There's Twitch as well. Cameras here that show us in our black t-shirts because we're German mimes, apparently. We are Mummenschanz. Well, this is the time on Sprockets when we dance. You may touch the monkey.
That would be awesome.
What? We could do like a Shields and Yarnell bit?
Just dance. Ooh, time. Just random box. Dance time.
Help. I'm walking against the wind.
Where's Dieter?
These cameras bring us to you via Twitch, and that is twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. You can even see the producers on there if you want. My goodness.
The capsule is visible today.
Yeah. You can see them in full space command. Brian Gertsch and Connor O'Donnell direct the video feed, and they moderate the Twitch chat as well. And that man waving to you in his Cubs cap is Jay Zawoski. Our executive producer, Jordan Malley, is always the guy in the hoodie and the backward sunburn hat. He's our audio man doing the things that he does. So it was kind of a strange weekend in that, obviously, the Sox games feel like they matter, and that's okay because we sort of pretended that this was going to be a little dress rehearsal for what playoff baseball might be like.
Pretend?
Yeah. Everybody knows it's really not. But the same, there's pretense also involved in the Cub thing, too, because it's like, yay, go Cubs, yay, home run, Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo. And you're like, okay, well, enjoy this while you can. It's really a strange, strange feeling on the north side. Just knowing that we're edging toward the end of something. It's not comfortable. It's like the last couple days of camp or the last couple days of college for a semester. Like when you know you're going home soon and you're there, but you're not there. Your mind is already home. Your mind is already on to the next thing. It's hard to describe the psychology of that, but you know, you say stay in the moment, stay present, be in the now. But you have to admit you're really not. That nobody is. The players aren't. The fans aren't. It's weird.
It's like Cubs senioritis, where you know they're all graduating or something. It's just a matter of time.
It is. It's more than senioritis, though. It's more than just kind of being done with this because we're moving on to the next thing. It's a bittersweet thing. It's also just knowing that, like, that's been your whole world, your whole life. I was comparing it to that last couple days of, like, that campus in your dorm or your fraternity house, wherever you are, that's your whole thing. And then it's like you're packing and you know it's something next and you're starting to plan other things and it makes it feel unstable.
I think the problem is we've been preparing for this end now since probably Theo saying the offense is broken.
Oh, sure. But preparing, for, you know, thinking about it, and then this is different. This feels different.
Oh, absolutely. It's because you know it's coming. And everybody has the same understanding. And everybody's on the same page. And that page is, unfortunately, the one where everything is coming to an end. So we're all on the last page of that book. Here's the worst part. What happens if they don't get the deals they want for anybody?
And they're all still looking at each other like, what are we doing here?
Like, what do I do with my hands? Like Talladega Nights? That's the question I have. The probability is low. But that's the question I have. Also, rewind yourself to 2 or 3 years ago. Let's go with two. Let's make it even more recent. Did you think that we would be talking about when the Cubs were going to sell everybody off at the trade deadline and how? These names, all three being discussed. Like Buster only talking about it on the broadcast last night on Sunday Night Baseball. Anthony Rizzo, Baez, and Bryant. Dude.
630 says it feels like the end of your favorite sitcom.
That's a good one.
That's a good comparison. But also, it's the same feeling when you know your sitcom should be ending. I guess that's different. That's a fascinating comparison, like the end of MASH or the end of Modern Family or Friends or Cheers or something like that. When you just, I hope it's like the end of Cheers. Do you remember that? You weren't even born
was
yet.
Was Kirstie Alley returning?
No, it was they had.
I can't believe I even pulled that nugget.
No, the last Cheers episode, they aired the episode and then they went to a live party and everybody was obliterated.
That's great.
Like wasted. Could barely get a sentence out of there. It was really funny. It was like a championship celebration, but way more embarrassing.
And then Frasier happened.
Right. Best spinoff of all time, right?
Spun off, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But this, it does kind of feel like that. But that, there's a different agreement when a sitcom ends, everybody's like, okay, let's get on with it. Let's move on to the next thing. It's a little more sad, I think, when the Cubs could have won more Emmy Awards. You know, they could have had more triumph here. It was great. And they got the one. But now we're really confronting the, you know, staring into the abyss here of what it's going to be.
And that's it. It's also unfulfilled hope where you thought there was going to be way more than just one. You thought there was at least going to be two.
Or that they'd be more committed to sustaining competition than they apparently are. Because that's the other thing, is we know that they're kind of done with that and not really interested in being the Dodgers, despite everything that we were told about the network and everything else, that now it's like they'll settle in to the dinner theater business for a while.
Well, the question is, what are they going to get back for these trades? If it's going to be a similar return to what we saw prospect-wise out of Yu Darvish, then you're not going to be happy.
Right, because it's not a quick snapback.
And did you finally see that we finally have some top prospects coming off the board in these trades now, thanks to the Adam Frazier deal? Finally! But the Padres didn't even part with their top three or four still.
Yeah, that's ominous. The return for Adam Frazier was ominous when it comes to what you're not going to restock your system moving some of these guys.
But that's the point, and that's what they needed to do with these. They spent a lot prospect-wise to get to that one title and then the attempts to get there afterward. and how those didn't work out because certain issues at the minor league levels, like developing pitching or maybe trading away perhaps one of the most viable pitching talents outside of Al Soleil and Dylan Cease, when that happened, that's where they are now. The needs are greater because the farm system hasn't panned out like they've wanted.
There's some really good news in the world of the White Sox with Eloy Jimenez coming back to play, and I'll be damned. It is the end of July, and he's coming back, and that's really cool. It does raise a lot of questions. It does mean there are a lot of decisions to be made, but when we come back, I want you to hear from Tony La Russa with his thoughts, and also, over the weekend, if you missed it, there was some really good insight into how Jimenez looks post rehabilitation and surgery. Chris Johnson, the Charlotte Knights hitting coach, was on Inside the Clubhouse on The Score over the weekend, and he talks about what this iteration of Eloy Jimenez should be expected to be. So all that is next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
When you called it a big-time win. You guys have gotten a lot of big-time wins without Eloy and Luis to be getting a big time win and then getting Eloy back tomorrow. What is that? What kind of boost is that for your club?
3 minutes, 4 minutes after we walked in the clubhouse and different guys saying different things, Eloy's name was mentioned. So we're trying to think, is there something appropriate to, I'm not going to say decorate the clubhouse, just to commemorate his return, you know? But we're looking forward to it. Team made a commitment that we were going to be in contention when he got back, and they honored it.
Well, they had a funeral procession when he was injured.
Seriously, are we just going to act like that didn't happen?
Right, I mean, you have to make this like Easter, like he's coming back from the cave, right? I mean, if the way they treated his injury and the way that all the flowing tributes that were pouring in as if he had shed his mortal coil and now he's back, like, well, we're not going to decorate the, hell yeah, decorate the locker room, festoon it with ribbons and bunting. I don't like bunting.
On the field bunting. Right. Everybody loves regular bunting. We really should just do that more often in life, but that's just me.
More festooning. We don't do enough festooning around here, damn it.
But here's the difference, is one guy knew he was probably coming back. Eloy definitely did, but the difference also being his teammates were the ones who prematurely eulogized him. So
I'm happy he's back, and I'm happy that the reports on how he looks are positive, including this one. Chris Johnson, the hitting coach of the Charlotte Knights, was on Inside the Clubhouse, and David Haugh asked him how the swing looks. Is it different? Is it the same?
Not a thing. That, I was wondering the same thing when we heard that he was coming here. I was wondering what his swing was going to look like. Is he going to make any physical changes because of that pec? And he has made none. Yesterday we were in the cage and I was, we were working on some high fastball stuff off the fastball velocity machine and he was just hitting line drive after line drive, gap to gap. In BP, he's hitting the ball out of the ballpark and his swing looks the exact same. So I think he's done a tremendous job of his rehab and he looks great.
Good. Now just take his gloves.
Seriously. Let us never speak of him in left field again. Wasn't that all our initial reaction when this thing happened? We went through a laundry list of injuries and calamities related to his play in the outfield. It was not a short list.
We said it before it happened. Beforehand, when he's tangled up in the net, when he's running into people. His defense is a danger to himself and others. He can get someone else hurt.
And then you know what I said? I was like, oh, thank God Luis Robert isn't hurt.
Right? Yeah, there. Let's see how that did. So I think, you know what? This also needs to be said, too, that we take medical and training staffs for granted, and we just think of them, okay, every major league team and every high-level pro team has great doctors and the best trainers, and they all do, but we rarely stop and say good job when somebody comes back ahead of schedule. And when we first heard about that injury, it sounded really bad because we hadn't heard about it before. And I read you the stuff that I got from orthopedists saying, I don't know, this could be really bad. And we know that sometimes doctors and trainers give you like what Scotty does on Star Trek, where they'll say, I don't know, Captain, it's going to take me some time. He'd always overestimate, and he'd look like a genius when he got the warp drive fixed early. But good job. I just want to say it. Good job from everybody involved getting this guy back with all the unknowns that were involved and everything that goes into the variance of the human body and having to have that kind of communication between the subjective and the objective, the measurements and the tests and diagnostics and everything else. But I think they all deserve credit. Not to mention, we see Yasmani Grandal running. He's in the field running. Still don't know what tendon he tore. We still don't know.
I know that bothers you.
It does.
On a visceral level.
It does. What tendon was it? Just tell us. So we can have some comp, some way to know. Maybe somebody else had the injury.
Can't wait until the baseball injury discussion becomes like football injury. Where no. It's like, he's got a knee.
I'll be fine. But it's...
Yeah, Yasmani Grandal underwent surgery, and 6 weeks later, maybe he's back.
And now it's time to figure out who plays where and who does what. I just think your DH is Eloy Jimenez.
Correct. There is no other discussion here.
I don't know. I don't know because...
It's not broke currently in left field. Don't fix it. Andrew Vaughn is fine. It's fine. You need his bat. You didn't need his fielding. I don't know if this is going to upset Eloy. We've heard him talk more about this. We know that he wants to be a capable left fielder. Just don't do it right now. Somehow make this okay temporarily just to get his back in the lineup and then figure things out.
Yeah, Andrew Vaughn's up to a 113 weighted runs created plus, so he has he's been hot of late. But don't forget that when Grandal is ready, that raises the question, if his bat's ready, but maybe he's not ready to catch, that's another decision.
That was the original discussion. Do you remember this? There was a lot of talk about Yasmani Grandal perhaps being the DH, which, given his statistical numbers, is still pretty fascinating. But the quality of his at-bats is what comes through previously, what did. But in this current discussion, where your viewpoint is what is best for today, it's Eloy Jimenez is the DH, Andrew Vaughn is in left.
I don't think there's any question that's for now. But then we're also talking about, with that lead they have in the division, using this time to optimize your roster offensively and defensively and know who your eighth and ninth and what's your defensive, we're leading by a run or two and now we're going to lock it down, what that lineup is going to look like. You've got to know what some of that stuff is, and they do have the luxury of the lead. They've got the luxury of some time to get this figured out.
Yes, they do. But we talked in the pre-show meeting about how, did I take this series more seriously than you? Probably, because I like to highlight games out of a 162-game schedule. I was looking forward to this series. I wanted to see the pitching matchups. It's always fun to see the best versus the best. But instead, what we saw was two very unfortunate games on Friday and Saturday, one where we both wanted to know what was going on with Carlos Rodon, because remember in the game before, he goes 7-large against Houston, gets up to 98 pitches. We've seen him in that frame before. But to me, what we saw was a more, I don't know how to put it, I wouldn't call it vintage, but that wasn't an atypical Carlos Rodon performance, given his whole body work out of his career. But it caused
He looked weird early. I thought at the outset, I thought he might have been hurt. He looked very strange. And
I think he's just gassed from the previous start.
The velocity
was down.
He didn't
get a break.
No, he didn't. But seeing the velo down and just sort of watching him fight himself a little bit, he emerged from it. And he does that. Like, he is a guy who does get better into a game. It just seemed kind of blocky and tight.
Right. And he only goes 4 innings in that game. So the next start for him is going to be one where I'm definitely watching just everything. How he's going to be between pitches, how much time there's going to be. Is he going to have one of those 30-pitch innings again? Because that's always the bugaboo with him. You know, it's the one big inning. And then you see the bullpen management after that. It makes sense, I guess, if you're going to be down by that much with Reynaldo Lopez.
Yeah, know how to lose a game.
It's an experiment, and I understand that. I don't mind that necessarily, but It just makes the needs for the White Sox that much more glaring as we get ready for this. It is obviously reliever. It's a matter of who, what you're giving up. And now the issue of, because you've had so many of these prospects perform well at the big league level in the times that they've shown, we've got to come to the understanding that this might be the time where you need those guys the most in a trade.
Yeah, you might have been able to showcase them ideally if you don't think they're as good as some of these guys have performed. I'm going to give you a slash line here. We like playing this game. And this is Who Am I?
Yes.
This slash line is a .324 batting average, on base percentage of .347, and a slugging percentage of .592. Which adds up to a .938 OPS, a .154 weighted runs created plus. And I'm going to say, who am I? And I am July Andrew Vaughn.
God, .938 OPS in July? Don't change anything.
That is Andrew Vaughn in July. Here's the other number. And this is by month. In March and April, Andrew Vaughn's K rate was 30.9%. In May, it was 23.2%. In June, it was 26.9%. July, 13.3%.
Oh.
He's cut his strikeout rate in half. And
that gave me goosebumps.
Argue about the statistical significance of 1 month, or is that an outlier? Is that randomness? Is it variance? It very well could be. Or it is a really polished hitting prospect adjusting to the adjustments.
And by the way, I'm not saying trade Andrew Vaughn. A lot of people have not listened and told me as much on Twitter, and I think I've built enough, by the way, for a Don't Be That Guy segment later. I've been keeping track. I've been keeping receipts.
Yep.
I've been bookmarking things. But I'm not saying trade Andrew Vaughn. I'm saying you have to worry about guys like Sheets, for example. And like, how, where are you going to put him?
Has Jake Berger shown some value?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one where I am the most concerned. Here's the problem. Is as great as they've been, and they have been great in their performances and what we expected to see out of them, you can't ask for more, but they're not Luis Robert and they're not Eloy Jimenez. And this is the embarrassment of riches.
And maybe things have worked out that all of these injuries have allowed some of your non-top line prospects. I mean, Gavin Sheets is really the guy you're talking about, as somebody who maybe has shown that nice looking, aesthetically pleasing swing to some people and has shown some professional poise. And maybe rather than somebody saying, yeah, I don't know about that guy, that you've got enough that you've seen at this level to convince someone, you hope.
Let's touch on what a texter brought up, which was probably the weirdest part of last night's game. Also, can we just have some Lance Lynn appreciation for like a few seconds? That RBI, come on. That was tremendous. Did you expect anything else out of 2021 Lance Lynn than to be the gamer, get the W, like salvage one game out of that Brewer series, and then also help his own cause? Like that's peak 2021 Lance Lynn. But 574 brings up a good point. Why did Michael Kopech get an at bat last night?
That was weird. It was all very weird. There was a big Twitter debate about how La Russa should have been timing and deploying pitchers, whether or not it'd be, especially with his National League experience, there was a time where a double switch might have been a little smarter move conservationally. Steve Stone is going to join us in just a couple moments. And did you see on Saturday the weird Moncada play when he didn't touch home plate and how they discussed it? And I still don't know what happened. I still don't know how Craig Counsell was allowed to challenge a play after a pitch had been thrown.
Right, that's the piece of it.
A minute and a half. It's supposed to be a 20-second rule. And the guy signaled him safe. But it was so well broadcast because you had, you know, Jason Benetti's got a law degree, and then and Tony La Russa's got a law degree. He's the way this was being argued and how he and Stoney discussed it. It was just really good television, even if I remain completely unsatisfied with how it was all adjudicated. We'll discuss that and more. White Sox talk with Stoney next on The Score.